From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. And we begin this hour with the story of a single Marine unit. They call themselves Dark Horse. The 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, nearly 1,000 enlisted men and officers, deployed to Afghanistan 1 year ago. By the time their 7-month tour ended, they had suffered the highest casualty rate of any Marine unit in the entire war. Talk to the Marines of the Dark Horse Battalion now, and you hear the same thing. It was worth it. But talk to their wives and families, and you hear a more complicated story. All this week, we'll be telling the story of the Dark Horse Battalion, both at war and on the home front. We begin today with NPR's Tom Bowman. And first, a word of warning, this story contains strong language.
Surprise! These are the sounds of Sangin in southern Afghanistan. The Marines learned the place fast. They slogged through canals, fought through dense vegetation, and patrolled a maze of narrow dirt roads bordered by 15-foot mud walls. It was October, 1 year ago. The Marines who served there remember Sangin as different from anywhere else they'd fought. Listen to how three of them describe the place. Sergeant Daniel Robert.
Hell.
Lance Corporal Jake Romo.
The Wild West.
Lieutenant Colonel Jason Morris.
Dangerous. I've heard it described as the most dangerous place in Afghanistan.
Colonel Morris, that last voice, was the commander of 3-5 Marines. Sangin had been a battleground long before Colonel Morris arrived. The British were there for 4 years, but could only fight the Taliban to a bloody stalemate. Now the British were leaving, Dark Horse Battalion moved in. Morris's orders were clear: eliminate the Taliban as a threat.
Fight initially was to be able to maneuver outside of your patrol base without getting shot or stepping on an IED that had been planted 50 yards or 100 yards outside of the patrol base.
It was mid-October 2010.
We had to be there at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Just a few weeks earlier, in California, it's before the mission started. The Marines gathered to say goodbye to their families in the middle of the night at the parade grounds at Camp Pendleton.
The buses came, and we kind of waited around for a while.
Ashley Tawney was there with her husband, Sergeant Ian Tawney. Ashley and Ian had known each other since they were kids. Ashley was pregnant with their first child. Sangin was the 5th deployment for Sergeant Tawney. Ashley says this one felt different.
I just remember driving in the car, and I would just kind of say, I just don't want you to go, and he's like, well, I'll be fine, you know, and I need to go, and I want to go. And he always said, if you're on the varsity team, why sit on the bench?
Sergeant Tawney had served in Iraq. Now, in Afghanistan, he would lead his own squad. They stood for hours that night at Pendleton. Then, just before sunrise, it was time to say goodbye. Ashley Tawney kissed her husband.
He said, I love you, and I just kind of, like, nodded, because I didn't want to, like, start to cry by saying it.
Sergeant Tawney boarded the bus that would take him to his plane for the long flight to Afghanistan.
Hey, come here.
A few weeks later, Sergeant Tawney led his men on a patrol.
All right, go ahead, take us out. Geiger, you should be second in the order of movement so you can control it.
That was his voice. It's from a video sent home to Ashley. Here's what Tawney's patrol was up against. The Taliban had stockpiled arms, poked holes in thick mud walls to ambush the Marines. Sergeant Tawney had just a part of the fight. For Colonel Morris, the Dark Horse commander, the battle was everywhere.
We had over 100 firefights in the first 3 weeks. This is what we had trained for. The only thing that really was different from what we had trained all our lives for as Marines was the IED threat.
IEDs, roadside bombs. On October 13th, 4 Marines from Dark Horse were killed when their vehicle was torn apart by a blast. The next day, some of Morris's Marines went out on a foot patrol.
The initial report came in that they were taking mortar fire.
Here's what Colonel Morris remembers.
I mean, a rapid whomp, whomp, whomp of explosions. What it turned out to be was 3 guys stepping on IEDs in rapid succession.
All 3 Marines were killed. In just 2 days, Morris lost 7 of his men, more than his predecessor had lost in 6 months. And it didn't let up. At the end of the week, another Marine was dead. Sergeant Ian Tawney. He was 25.
At our house we just bought, we had these, a lot of French doors with windows in them.
Ashley Tawney remembers waking up from a nap on her couch. Through the glass of the French doors, she watched two Marine officers pass by. She didn't have to open the door to see them standing there.
And it was just a real solemn, just very eerie sight. It's just like the movies, just like the movies. And I just remember saying, oh shit.
To this day, she doesn't know how she made it to the front door.
I felt like I like floated over there or something, or was like being propelled towards the door. And everything was kind of in slow motion. And I opened the door and then they started off with the whole spiel. And I was just in shock. Went and sat down on the couch and I remember my cat was like playing with the chaplain's uniform. Then they started to do the paperwork, the whole me going to Dover to meet his body. And that's when it hit me and I just covered my face with my hands and was like, oh my God, oh my God. And there's no goodbye and there's no nothing. I couldn't fathom it that he was gone.
What happened to Ashley Tawney was happening to other Marine families. The emails and phone calls flew back and forth. To calm everyone down, the Marines convened a town hall meeting. Listen to what the wives remember about that time. Amy Murray.
I was not prepared for it to be as bad as it was. I don't think any of us really thought it was going to be like it was in October.
Melissa Fromm.
Sometimes you got off the phone and your heart would sink.
Kate Wyatt.
It's pretty much hell on earth for most wives, just going day to day with not knowing.
It was pretty much hell on earth for the Marines in Sangin, too. Here's how some of them remember October 2010. Corporal Marcus Cicilli.
My date of injury was October 9th. I stepped on an IED. That was probably the eighth person that walked over that same IED.
Captain Chris Esri.
You know, Sparks just grabbed his machine gun and went to the rooftop, began to exchange fire with the insurgents when he was struck by a bullet.
Lance Corporal Josue Barone.
There's IEDs everywhere and you just don't know where they're at. So one of my friends just stepped on one and it got both of us. We had so many that every day someone was dying or every day someone was losing a limb. We were just like, when are they going to stop?
It fell to Colonel Morris to fix things.
I was on my own for this. I mean, having to figure this out, it's up to the battalion commander.
He pressed his company commanders to take extra care on patrol. He stepped up training. The Marines buried mock IEDs and practiced finding them. And Morris did one more thing. He asked for reinforcements. His bosses, back at the Pentagon, had a different idea. Defense Secretary Robert Gates suggested pulling the Marines out of Sangin for a while.
It officially came to me, and I said, absolutely not.
That's General Jim Amos, the top officer in the Marine Corps.
We don't do business that way. You'd have broken the spirit of that battalion.
Instead of pulling Dark Horse out, the military sent hundreds more Marines in, and also mine-clearing equipment. 2 months went by. The fighting let up. Colonel Morris said life returned, markets opened, children were on the streets. But progress came at a price. The battalion lost 25 dead, 184 wounded, 34 of them lost at least one limb. Ask the Marines, and they say it was worth it. Colonel Morris.
Every single Marine that was over there and saw the beginning and saw the end or saw 4 months later saw the 180-degree change.
Sergeant John Decker.
It went from total war fighting of 3 months to saving lives, rebuilding homes.
Lance Corporal Josue Barone, he lost one eye, one leg, and some of his closest friends.
It was worth it because if I say that it wasn't worth it, then what about my friends that died? It's like I'm disrespecting them, you know? Like saying they just died for nothing.
Honor the dead! Please dead! Out!
Back at Camp Pendleton in April, the survivors of Dark Horse gathered for a memorial service. Some stood, some sat, at a helicopter landing zone, a wide patch of asphalt surrounded by low brush, the mountains in the distance. In front of them, 25 combat crosses, one for each of the dead. helmets and weapons and combat boots set on a wooden base. Colonel Jason Morris, Dark Horse's commander, stood before the families and the wounded.
I hope you understand how much we appreciated your sons, your husbands, your brothers in life, and how much we continue to value their sacrifice and their memory. Marines, your Marines, these Marines, they took the fight to the enemy, and they won.
As the wind kicked up, they called the roll of the Marines who were lost.
Sergeant Tony!
Ashley Tawney was there as her husband's name was called out. She was holding her infant daughter, Claire, born 3 months after her father died. Ashley remembers looking out at the crowd.
Just seeing all the people that this deployment had affected, all there, all the wounded. Just the loss is just, like, overwhelming. And it kind of felt like his work funeral. Like, he will never get up when it's dark outside and drive to work and come home late. Our life down there was over. That chapter was over.
Ashley Tawney is starting a new chapter. She's moving to North Carolina. Her mother lives there, and she says it's not far from the Marine base at Camp Lejeune.
Being part of that military, the Marine family, I guess, it's real, you feel real secure. So it's hard because I still longed for that. I still wanted to be part of that life, but I didn't have him anymore. And he was my connection to that life. I'm still a military widow, but then I'm not anymore. Like, I'm back in civilian life again. So it's hard to know where to fit in.
Tom Bowman, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.